Welcome to Enneagram with JB, a podcast about Enneagram personalities, where you'll uncover and discover more about yourself and others through the helpful tool of the Enneagram. I'm your host, Julie Underwood.
Today, I am talking with Courtney Berman. Courtney is a certified Enneagram coach, ministry leader, mom of four, and married to her husband for nearly 20 years. She lives just outside of Nashville, Tennessee. She loves helping people grow in self-awareness and make meaningful changes in their lives. So welcome, Courtney.
Thanks, Jackie. So good to be here.
You have been a part of this podcast in the past. You've been on this podcast as a guest. And so you are a familiar voice and a familiar face for a lot of us. So,
Good. We're excited. I love it.
Yeah. Well, thanks. We're excited to have you back. Okay. Before we jump into just, you know, the questions of the day, let me ask you just some personal stuff for people to get to know you a little bit better.
Sure.
Are you a hiker or a biker?
I like both. I love, yeah, not, I will say I do not like mountain biking. That's very scary. But like road biking, well, not skinny tires and bike shorts, but I love like biking and I like getting in nature. I'd say I like both of them. I'm not super into either. Like I don't have a ton of gear, but it's like, it's a fun way to go.
I would definitely be hiker over biker because there's something about getting on a bike that scares me, even though I know how to do it. I don't know, like I'm going to crash or something. So weird.
I get it. I know. I always wear my helmet like a weirdo, but I mean, I'm glad, like, you know, and my kids are like, well, if mom's wearing her helmet, you know, so it's like, yep, this is what we do. That's funny.
Okay. Pool or ocean?
I like to be on a beach. I'd rather swim in a pool. I don't like the idea of like sea life by me, but who am I fooling? Because what's in pools, you know, but like, I don't know. In theory, it feels safer to me.
I don't know. I want to be on the ocean, but the last couple times I've been at the ocean, we vacation in Florida every year, there's just been sharks. Like I have seen sharks like too close for comfort. So I tend to enjoy the pool more, but I'm disappointed because I've always been a beach girl.
Well, totally. And it's like, I didn't even know that purple flag existed until we lived here and started going there. And then it's like marine life. So it's like, it might be a jellyfish, might be a shark, like either way, just be aware. And you're like, well, that takes away some of the relaxing for me.
Like I want a boogie board, you guys. I still want a boogie board. So my sister and I and my brother, we'll get out there sometimes and we look like a crazy mess. But the whole time you're out there, you're like, oh my gosh, oh my goodness, is that it?
Yes. Okay, I believe so it.
Are you a beach or mountain kind of girl?
Again, I like them both, but again, true to form, right? It's give me it all, give it to me. I think that, you know, honestly, I know the popular answer probably would be beach, but there's something really nice about the mountains. I think my favorite place is Zion National Park, and it's just like another world. Like it's beautiful and it's just gorgeous. And there's just like a little slower pace in the mountains, I feel like, which is nice because if I'm looking to relax, that feels really good.
I love both. I'm like you though. It's like, I'm a seven. So it is that piece of like all of it. I probably would sum up my answer just like yours. It's the same. Like I love the beach, but there's something about those mountains. Okay. Coffee or tea?
Chai tea specifically. I do not like coffee. I have like a little baby palate and it's so bitter to me. I wish I could enjoy it, but I don't. I know you like coffee. We've gone out for coffee. Well, whatever. We can talk later. But I saw a candle that reminded me of you because Honest has one. And I was like, oh, I should get that for Jackie. It's her favorite drink, the Roosevelt.
Yes, it is. Okay. Important question. I think you've already said it, but just for our audience again, what's your Enneagram type?
Oh, yeah. Type 8.
Type 8. So we're going to talk about lots of great things about the type 8 today. We're going to focus on growth, though. So like what has growth looked like for you as a type 8? In your journey with the Enneagram. So one of those things that I think everybody should know too, like Courtney is an Enneagram coach. And so she's had to do her own work to be able to do work with other people. Right. And so lots of growth work and we're always on the journey of growth work. So even though we're coaches, we are still journeying with everybody day to day, as far as learning new things about ourselves along the journey. So what has growth looked like for you as an eight? But I guess before we get there, let's ask this. What led you to the Enneagram to begin with?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think I remember hearing about it back when we were in Las Vegas. So that was like early 2000s and maybe towards the end, like 2010. And I saw a post or something. It might have been Shauna Nyquist talking about it. And I just was like, what is this? I like Myers-Briggs, you know, whatever. I was curious. And I didn't know, obviously, I didn't know much about it. But I was like, oh, this is really interesting. At that time, I read it, just quick glance. And I was like, oh, I think I'm probably a one. And I was looking at it through a work setting. Oh, I want to make things better. Do this, you know? And so that's how I came across it. And I was leading this like little team at the time. And I'm like, guys, let's talk about the Enneagram. So I knew just enough to be dangerous. Probably not super helpful, but the heart behind it was like, hey, let's learn and grow. And I still remember that day. It was like a really sweet, fun day. But that was my first experience with it for sure. It was a while ago. So at least 15 years ago, almost.
I love that. I love that so many of us in the coaching space have done this for a long time. We have delved in, we have read the books, we are reading the books. And, you know, when you're working with a coach, you want somebody that's got some experience in it. You know, the more we're in it, the more we learn. Okay. So what is it like for you to read about yourself through the lens of the eight?
Yes. Okay. So this is where you might visibly see me start sweating, right? I remember, so that was kind of that Vegas experience. And then the next, you know, I stayed in touch with the Enneagram. And then we're interviewing for a job in Nashville. My husband and I were staying at a hotel. And I don't know why, this is not romantic, but we were like reading an Enneagram book to each other. Really, really steamy. And he's like, hey, I think this might be you. And I'm like, okay. And he starts reading about an eight. And I remember like feeling physically ill. Like I was like, I think I need you to stop. I need to go take a shower. Like something is wrong. He's like, oh, okay. And then I get done. He's like, okay, can I finish? I was like, no, stop. I just remember feeling so exposed. And man, like they talk about sometimes like someone's reading your mail, but it was like someone's reading my thoughts. Someone, like really tender areas that I go to great length not to show were on display. And I think you overlay that with the woman piece for assertive women, especially, but like as an eight, you know, there's like, well, you know, like Jack Nicholson or like Hitler. And you're like, cool, cool, cool. That's what I'm going for in life. You know, like I just remember being like, babe, you marry Jack or Hitler. So congratulations. Like I just felt so much shame. And like so embarrassed because like, you know, desirable women are like kind and modest and accommodating. And I'm like strong and confident and decisive. And it didn't feel great. It actually took me a really long time. I think one of my first conversations with you, I was like, hey, just so you know, I think I'm not an eight. So could you help me like figure out anything other than that? And you were so gracious. And you're like, oh, no, here's what I see in you that lines up and tracks with that. And I think it's just for me, the woman piece. Every male eight I've met just like loves their eightness. They like own it. They embody it. And for me, it's kind of, it has felt for a long time, like more of a liability. And so that's been a tough thing for me. I mean, you know, we'll talk about it more, I'm sure. But I think that was kind of the hardest thing where it was like, oh, man, this feels deeply personal. And it feels exposing. And it feels like, I don't know if this is even welcome, like culturally, relationally, you know, it's just kind of crazy.
I'm so thankful that you're being vulnerable and honest today with us, because I just think that so many other women that are eights probably feel the same way. And I work with a lot of different Enneagram types. When women come to me that are eights, they oftentimes feel like, can we find a different number? Can we say it a different way? You know, like, can we mask this somehow? Because there is the assertiveness that isn't necessarily, you know, invited into spaces. It's often talked about in derogatory ways and things like that. And you know, when I think about women that are making huge impacts in the world, they have to be strong and assertive. And so I oftentimes think about that with my eights. And I'm an assertive woman too. So I'm a seven with a good old eight wing. And so trying to figure the balance of like, yeah, oftentimes we feel like we're too much for environments. And at the same time, we feel like we're not enough.
It's tricky. It's really tricky. Yeah. I think that's the woman. I really do think that's the woman piece. Maybe it's the human piece. I don't know. Cause I've only ever been a woman, but you know, like it really is. It's really hard to be in an environment and to be like, okay, I'm too much or I'm too little, or maybe, and I'm too little. And then it just leads to like, I don't think I'm welcome here. You know, I don't belong, which is a terrible feeling. And so I think that's kind of that's a great way to put it. I feel like that was kind of triggered where you're like, oh man, give me anything else. Like, I think I was like, how about a four? I'm creative. You're like, you are not a four. Like, stop. I was like, but there's like a spicy subtype. You're like, stop it. Stop.
You're not that one. You're not. I mean, you can be if you want. You get to choose what you are. But if you want to do work, then I don't think that's the right one. Okay. When you were doing this work, right, was there an aha moment when you discovered your type? Like, what was that aha moment that you had? And, I mean, we heard a little bit of it, you know, the hotel scene. But was there a time that when we're looking at this from a growth side or a positive side, that you're able to hold space for yourself in this and see like, okay, and a little bit more settled? And maybe it was like, maybe you can even speak to like, was that in the privacy of your own study time as far as learning about yourself instead of having somebody expose it? Like, what did it look like?
I have two. So I'll share kind of the more quiet one and then like a more public one if you want. But the privacy and the smaller moments, I think it's the compassion piece. It's the, like, am I really willing to buy what I'm selling? Like, I believe this for other people. I believe that we are wonderfully and fearfully made. I believe that we are made in God's image and that we are divine image bearers. So why would I be made wrong? You know? That's been a bit of a journey. You know, and I think if you're going to add another layer, sometimes working in a church setting can be tricky too, because not in a bad way, but oftentimes gender roles are upheld there. And so for assertive women, that can be a really tricky space. And so for me, it's like, how can I succeed and function where I am and be true to who God's made me to be, and not feel ashamed, but feel compassionate, just like I would for anybody else. Like, I'm happy to champion other people. So what does that look like to be a champion for myself? So that's been a bit of a journey. I don't know if that's a moment, but I know you were a part of this when we were doing stance work as a staff one day. And I have it. So we get along really well, I think, Jackie, because we're like very similar. I've got big seven wing, big seven energy at work. Like, I just like to have fun. I like to toe the line. Just this year, I'm like, you know what? I'm not telling off color jokes anymore. So welcome to the new Courtney. You know, I was like, I don't want to get fired for that. So that's my journey. And so I'm like, if I get fired for something else, so be it. But it's not going to be my own doing in telling off color jokes.
That's your thing this year. Like, that's your word. That's your...
It is. We were watching The Bear. I don't know if you've watched this. And when it was a moment when Richard's like, I wear suits now. And I was like, I don't tell off color jokes anymore. That's me leveling up. Like, I don't do that. And so that was my moment. And I told my boss, and he was kind of like, honestly, like, well, shoot, that's too bad. I'm like, well, off hours, like, I will tell you jokes, but I'm not going to do it in these four walls, my friend. And, but I say that because I try to have a good time at work. I try to have fun. And I can sometimes forget that my presence in a room is perceived differently than I think it is. Cause I'm like, hey, we're just buds. We're just hanging out, you know, and you had us move around the room. And of course it was me and like three other guys in the assertive stance, which is totally normal every time I do a personality thing. And everybody else is kind of scattered throughout the room in other corners. And then you're like, hey, when these people walk in the room, are you reading their body language? You're taking cues from them. You are looking how to behave off of reading their body language. Essentially, you're figuring out what to expect. And it's not a negative statement at all. It's just I haven't taken that seriously. Like, the weight that I carry and the impact I have in our room, I have not stewarded well. Because I can be, I mean, not crazy moody, but I can be kind of moody, you know, so I can come in and have like not the best attitude, or I can be really silly, or it just was like an invitation to grow up, essentially, is what that moment was. And not in a judgmental way. It was a really gentle, respectful way, but that was a huge aha moment for me, because in my head, I'm like, oh, we're besties. Like, I would take a bullet for you. Like, we're all equals. And it's like, oh, no. Like,
interesting, because we are the opposite, right? So you're an 8-7, I'm a 7-8. That line that you just said is so 7. When you said, you know, like, we're all equals. So 7s neutralize authority.
And that's what I think I try to do. Well, I'm married to the boss and I had a high position. And I'm just like, hey, I just want to be like it makes that power makes me uncomfortable a little bit, you know? And so I think I was trying to neutralize it. And I was like, rather than squash that, what if I just own it well? Like, quit denying it because it's not working.
Okay. So what does owning it well look like?
Not telling off-color jokes anymore. No. I mean, what it looks like is being leading myself well. So trying to be aware of my body language, not shouting out every thought I've ever had in a meeting, trying to be more agreeable. I don't know if I've said body language, but my face it will give away, and my body language will give away how I feel. So again, just trying to do that well. And that's been a journey.
My kids would say to me, like, fix your face, mom, fix your face. And I'm like, what? You guys, like, I think, and I was just talking to some friends today. They came over to do some filming, and we were talking about something funny. And I have a sweatshirt that I love that I just bought that says East Coast. And I'm from New England, like East Coast, New England, right? So all of that feistiness, and if you know, you know, it's there, right? But I've lived in the South longer than I lived in New England, and it's like embedded, y'all. Like, I'm trying. I try. I really try. But my face probably speaks louder than anything else. So
isn't that the truth?
It's so funny. Yeah. Because my kids will be like, fix your face. I'm like, what? They're like, clearly everybody knows what you're thinking right now. And I was like, oh, wow.
Well, yeah. Is that the worst thing? I don't know that it is.
And I have teenagers. So, you know, I'm like, maybe everybody should know. So if you've studied the Enneagram for years and now use it to coach others, what has your personal journey around growth look like over the years? Like, you just talked a little bit about like those aha moments, but what are you doing like on the daily or weekly to move towards growth?
So I do try to read a lot. You know, there's tons of content. So I am trying to read, listening to podcasts. That's another great way, as a mom of four, you know, if I can't sit down and read with a cozy cup of whatever, you know, just listening on the go. Journaling, I go to counseling regularly. You know, I think a huge piece of it too is I think of like teachers, like almost like continuing ed. Like I'm always trying to learn, always trying to read, always trying to listen. Oh, I didn't know that about that type, or oh, I didn't realize that about personality. And I think for me, Enneagram, and we've talked about this a little bit, but it weaves in with other things too, where it's like attachment and there's other things that can kind of tie in. So I try to learn about that, but it basically, like, I kind of try to follow my curiosity. And it's amazing how it shows up, because it's like, oh, you know, clients are curious generally about the same things. And what I find interesting or impactful, generally, my clients feel the same way.
I'm with you. Always a student, right? And not just Enneagram, like lots of different modalities. Whatever sparks my interest, I'm going to dig into it. Not that I'm going to use it all, right? But I'm just curious. I want to understand people well. So, I'm kind of throwing a curveball at you, but I think you can follow me on this because I feel super passionate about this right now. But the growth work that Courtney and I do with clients, it's not about just helping somebody learn about their Enneagram type. It's helping them get below the type to the why, because we're not interested in putting labels on people. We're not, as coaches. You and I both do a lot of work around like the roots, the whys, like, what does growth look like? How do we get healthy? So instead of just saying, well, I'm assertive, I'm an eight, I show up big, this is what I do. You've done the work of saying like, I am assertive. I am an eight. I do show up big, but should I always show up big?
Well, even realizing I have a choice. I don't always have to show up big. I don't have to share everything I'm thinking. I actually have control over my body at some level. And even just realizing that, and then, okay, do what you will with it. And sometimes in some spaces it's more than appropriate, you know, and that's being true to who I am. And then in others, it's actually not super helpful because other people, believe it or not, do have thoughts that they actually carefully think about that if I'm taking up all the space in the room, they're not going to. So by me graciously, not really, but you know, by stepping back, it's actually a lot better for everybody.
Talk to me about this again, curveballs. Sorry. I feel like you can go with me. Talk to me about this a little bit. I've seen this quite a bit, working with eights, and it's something that we talk out often. But it is the in the moment. So it's probably the passion that I'm talking about, right? Like I want what I want. I want it now. And I big picture. So eights are big picture thinkers. It's like all the possibilities, all the things, and they can move into action really fast. So, and I've often thought about it, and even explained it like this lately, but again, I'd love to hear you work through this with me, where I feel like they're big picture, all the things, let's go do it. Then they put their head down and start to go. Maybe they get bored. Maybe they don't like what they're doing. Maybe it's not working. And then they pivot. And so the thought on like, what if we slowed things down a little bit instead of moving into action fast? What is that? Like you're as an eight, can you speak into that?
So I'm ready, fire, aim, you know, like I am so quick to action. You know, when I used to be concerned about myself, because you read about like lack of executive functioning or impulsivity. And I'm like, hello, my name's Courtney. Yes. You know, that's just normal for me. I move fast. And I think, you know, part of it, even growing up, there's like a, okay, we got to leave. We got to do this now. We got to do this. So everything I did, I just did quickly. And I kind of thought that's the way the world functioned. And then you get into the world and you realize that's not how it functions. So that is true. The pivot and the overwhelm, I think for me, I feel overwhelmed, probably similar to a seven where there's just so many things and I don't want to get bogged down, tied down. What if it's not the right thing? It's not bringing me joy. Also the mundane tasks and all the things. I'm like, this is killing me. If this is the rest of my life, I literally might die, you know, whatever.
The bored. I hear bored a lot. Yeah. And it's not, it's like, it happens fast.
It does. So one thing I've realized about myself is I am great. I really do love a challenge. That's where like, so we're, you know, occasionally called challengers. I feel like that can, I feel like it can have a negative connotation. Like we just walk around kind of giving people like, whatever, you know, challenge. But I like a task challenge or even a personal challenge. I like a goal. So like my best jobs have been where I come in and I clean up something, I start something, and then I'm able to hand it off. Because at some level, it gets under control and it doesn't feel like, I don't know, it doesn't feel quite as exciting because there's not as much innovating or hard work. It's kind of just maintaining. And then I'm like, I'm done with this, you know, and that's a little crass. That's not completely true. But you know, I'm like, okay, I've done a job and I've done a good job of it. And now I would love to go do this somewhere else. You know,
it sounds accurate. Like everything you're saying to me, I'm like, oh yeah. Okay. This is what my clients experience or what I read about for the eight. So having you explain it, and it's not a like dismissive part of the eight. You know, I do think that it can be dangerous when you're leading a large group of people and you're getting into something and then you decide to change, move, add. And we see that happen a lot in leadership. You know, so that is like one of those like warning signs, like, hey, slow down, wait a minute, look at the big picture, I always want to say like, lift your head, put your eyes out front, long vision, like what is down the pike? Make sure that you're taking into account the people around you and the what's coming down the lane, like not just right now, right? Because there's a tendency to be in the moment right now. What do I want right now?
Right. It's really good. One of the best things I had was when you came to do the staff thing, my boss at that time, and he's still my boss, and I'd like to talk, I can talk about him later because he's actually been a really great champion for me, which as a female aide doesn't happen all the time. But he understood this about me. And so I came in and I helped with our kids ministry, and it kind of just needed some direction, vision, all this kind of stuff. I'm like, great, love it. I'm like, can you give me 2 years? Can I do this for 2 years? And then I want to stay in staff, but maybe we could figure out a different area. And if there isn't one, I'm happy to stay there, you know? And so he was gracious. We journeyed it, and I was able to transition because I'm like, I'm still here. I'm just not the person you're going to see, but we've built up this amazing team who's super passionate and excited about this. So I was kind of like the best of both worlds, but I agree. It's easy. There are times where I'm like, I'm just going to burn it all down. You're like, you know, and again, I'm married to probably a self-preservation one. So pretty cautious, pretty slow moving. And so he has talked me off the ledge more times than, you know, he would care to, where he's like, really, we're doing this again. And I'm like, no, but for real, you know? And so he's really good at this. Hey, think about this. Think about all the good stuff. Like, oh yeah, I guess that's right. That's true. But it just feels overwhelming. And again, I think it is the passion. Because I'm like, you don't experience this. You don't get like burnt up by this because it is killing me. So yeah.
It's one of those things that you start to recognize as an Enneagram 8, right? One of the tips and tricks around this that I've used with clients that I think you and I've probably talked about too, is the beginning, middle, end, the importance of the project. And when we are thinking long term situations, you guys, when we're thinking about jobs, when we're thinking about marriage, when we think about raising children, things that we can sometimes feel stuck in. And I don't mean that in a bad way, like you're not stuck in this, but when we have personalities that are driven and we want to go and do and chase and all the things, and then life happens and we're not always able to go and chase and do like we used to or we want to. We have to make things smaller. We have to give ourselves the beginning, middle, end goals. We have to really kind of bring it in and make sense of the situation so that we can feel like we're finishing the chapter so we can turn the page, right? Like that piece has been really helpful for me as a coach to understand with my eights. And I have found that when my eights hear that, they can move into action in a different way. Like it's not so overwhelming, or the boredom doesn't set in because they have made a plan, or they have made the project smaller so that there's mini rewards along the way.
Totally. The mini rewards, and even just realizing like, okay, I will not be in this forever. Like I can deal with a lot. I'm pretty strong. So just even calling a spade, like we are raising 4 kids. We have a 3-year-old and a 14-year-old. Like we are in it, you know, but in 5 years, it's going to look really different. So even just recognize, okay, we are in this middle stage right now where we have a very busy life. In 5 years, it's going to look really different. And then in 5 more years, it's going to look even more different. And so just, it allows me to fully be in this moment more and appreciate it rather than, like you said, getting overwhelmed by the stuckness and being like, something needs to change. I need to change something. This isn't working. Well, okay, let's make a plan. And so that this is not only tolerable, but like we can enjoy this season or what have you.
Okay. Talk about this for a minute too, as I'm thinking through, like, there's, you know, lots of different people are probably listening to this podcast, different numbers. There might be male eights and female eights. I do think that the gender role does play a little bit of a different, way for the eights in this. So if we think about the moms, let's just talk to moms for just a couple minutes on this, because it can feel like you can feel trapped. You can feel like, wait, I want to do something. Wait, I want to do more. And do you find that, or have you found that in you know, the 14 years that you have found yourself like taking on things and then recognizing like, I can't, but I want to. And I talk about that because that's real. I feel like that's real.
That is the push and pull. And left to my own desires, I shouldn't say that. Left to my own devices, I think is the phrase. I used to fill up our calendar, fill up my plate, like to where everything is just overflowing and we have no margin and all that kind of stuff. After doing a little bit of work, I realized, okay, I can slow down. We can, things are still good. I'm still good. Like I'm worthy. We're, you know, all the things. It's okay to rest. Now, 14 years, you're like, okay, but I have dreams. I have ambitions. Outside of this, it doesn't make this bad. It doesn't make me bad. What does it look like to be faithful to that? Well, that has been tricky, but I think it's baby steps. I just had a meeting this week with someone who was talking with him, and I'm like, you know, in this season, my career isn't number one. Like we have four kids. I was kind of joking. I'm like, we have four kids and my husband has a really demanding job. Like I co-sign on all these decisions at some level. And now we're living in the reality of it. And this is the decisions that we've made for the season. Like I am the more on-call parent. So, and quite frankly, there's nowhere else I would want to be, you know, but in the moment it is easy because it's overwhelming. If you, four kids, like someone's always unhappy. Someone's all like, there's just a lot happening. And at the same time, I'm like, there's nowhere else I'd want to be. I wouldn't want someone else to do this work. But it is hard because yeah, I have dreams. But I think, you know, my son will go to school in about 18 months and I'm like, okay, at that point, like things are going to look different. But until then, I want to be really faithful to getting him to that spot well. And I still want to show up for my family well. Like high school, you know this, you've launched children. Like they still need a lot.
Yeah, there's a different demand in high school. And people used to say that. And I would be like, how in the world? Because I, you know, especially with twins, I'm like, whatever. I'm like, how could this be more difficult? It's different. It's a difficult in a different way. You've just got to keep your ears open and your eyes open, your heart open, your home. Like for me, my home is open. Like I just, you, for me, you know, and everybody does it different. So there are women that they have taken the lead as far as breadwinners in your home. So we are not saying anything, you know, against that at all. Everybody does it different. There's just, you know, the ways that we've just, you know, structured our homes. Courtney and I probably a little bit similar. Well, a lot similar. We both have four. Our husbands are really driven. And so that being, we did co-sign on this. We did. My babies were all surprises. I think yours were too. So
yeah, that makes me feel so much better. Maybe that's an Enneagram study. Maybe we send out some research on that. Like we knew how this worked, but I was still surprised.
Yes, I was still surprised when this happened. But the balance of all of it has been, I think it's tricky, you know, and I think that for assertive people, so 3, 7, 8 in that assertive grouping, it can feel hard to not be able to drive at the pace you want to drive or do what you want to do. And not saying that the other personality types don't deal with this kind of stuff too. I think that they do, just that assertive, they stand independently and can push against. And so it can feel like, we're just going to drag everybody behind us, you know, when we're not aware. And then we become more aware and we're like, oh, just like you, I'm like crazy schedule doing all these things. And my kids are like, can't find their shoes. We know when they're little and I'm like, where's your shoe? You know, and recognizing I didn't put the shoe back probably. And there's no margin to find the shoe because I booked our schedule so full.
And I think, you know, in I guess full transparency, like my husband and I are having conversations to try to even things out a little more right now and looking ahead to the future, because it's like, okay, I know we've fallen into this. And again, I've kind of co-signed and gone along with things. And what would it look like to reevaluate? Not meaning you quit your job. That's not what I'm saying. Like, how can we both thrive, you know, and how can we both do what we feel called to do? So yeah, we're trying to figure that out too.
I've got 3.5 years left and my babies graduate from high school, which I'm telling you, when you are in the 3-year-old stage, you think it's never going to happen. And then here you are. So I'm like you, like, okay, what am I going to do with myself? I have a full-time job. Like, I still think like, oh, they're such my heart. Okay. let's wrap this conversation up. I could talk to you forever, really, but wrapping this conversation up, like, what is a piece of advice you'd give to other eights when they're doing their work? What would you say to other types like you?
I have a couple thoughts on this, but I can try to keep it brief. Because I think specifically female eights, you know, like one of the best blessings I had was what I said, where my boss, he's also an eight. And so I am not scary to him. I'm not intimidating. If anything, he's like, oh, you get me. We can have conflict and I don't cry, which isn't bad, but he knows he's not hurting my feelings. Like, this is just part of how we do business. And I've had a lot of staff members say, like, you guys have actually really helped me with conflict because I can see it go well. And then nobody leaves feeling disrespected. I'm like, oh, well, happy my conflict helped you, you know, but finding somebody who not only makes space or tolerates you to your line, but can celebrate you. One of the first things he said is like, I actually really want you to show up more. Like, he's like, I feel like you're holding back. Like, you're trying to be polite right now. I'll tell you when you cross the line. I'm like, great. You know, so that was like music to me. That almost made me cry happy tears, but that was very touching to me. So to have someone in your corner was a big deal. Gosh, advice, be more gentle than you think you should be. And trust people when they give you feedback about yourself. Okay, so I used to not believe people when they would give me difficult feedback, or I'd kind of try to defend it, minimize it. You're being sensitive. I didn't mean it like that. You know, totally like invalidating them. And now I get to sit with that and say, okay, I believe you. I'm sorry. That is not at all my intent, but can I try that again? Or can we start this over? Are you open to that? And that's very humbling. Again, because generally I don't try to hurt people or be intimidating. So when it's received that way, it's hard. And I am still figuring out my kids' types because they're still forming. I have guesses. But one of my daughters is very tenderhearted, and it is easy for me to, I say crush, that's probably a bit dramatic, but it feels like that. Like, just by being direct, or just, you know, by being myself, I can crush her. So I have to be very much more gentle than I would generally be. And that's a challenge, because it feels like you go much slower and, like, you're not being super, for me, it feels like I'm not being fully honest, but it's actually probably a much more respectful and palatable way to communicate.
That's good. It's that attunement, like attuning to another human. It's not our way or the highway. Yeah. It's like both or all people, whoever's in the conversation, matter. And that's hard, because you do have to slow down and you have to read. You've got to read body language and facial expressions and just
read the room. Read the room. That's what I wrote down. Or like, that's in thinking about this. That's what I wrote down, was like, read the room. Like, don't expect people to bend to you, you know? But like, be willing to pivot when you realize, oh, this might not be going well. Like, I might be hurting them, or this might not be coming across the way I had hoped. So, yes, definitely reading the room is a big deal. You know, I have one more if you're okay with it, but like, basically, making peace with being uncomfortable, I would say. You know, I think probably some types, I don't know, are maybe more apt to feeling comfortable in the work process. Like, I imagine for fours, they're like, I love digging in and getting down in there. I could be wrong. But I think for eights, feeling exposed and kind of dealing with things that feel close to our hearts and feel really personal is really hard. And it feels worse before it gets better, generally. Like, I remember going to counseling and just more so just becoming aware of my, like, integrating my body and just my soul, my, like, oh, anxiety, that's when I have that stomach ache, that's what that is. Oh, who knew, you know? And so just becoming aware of these things, it's not comfortable, but it's worth it. And it's not like we ever arrive. That's the other thing. I think at some point, not that long ago, probably 7 years ago, I thought, oh, okay, I can't wait till this day. I like put a check in the box and I'm like, I did it. I'm amazing. And the more I'm in this, the more I'm like, it's like walking towards a star. Like, it's like, okay, I will move in the right direction. I will probably never reach my, you know, hopeful destination, but man, my life's going to be better for it, because at least I'm moving in that direction rather than staying here.
Right.
So
good.
Yeah. Well, you're sweet. You're a part of it. And yeah, it's that lifelong commitment, you know?
It is. It's a journey, you know. I'm doing a lot of work right now on some new projects, and with the journey is in the title of them. But it is the journey, it's the work, and it's not about a destination. It's about the journey, the whole journey, so that when we get to the end of it, we can feel like we held space for ourselves well. We held space for other people well. We were able to recognize our own part of our own story, and maybe even the impacts we've had on other people's stories. You know, like I talked to my daughter this morning. She's in college and she's a six, and she was working through something. She had a job thing that she had to do, and she had a conversation with somebody, and at the end of it, she's like, "It was fine. It was fine. I don't know that I felt the resolve that I needed." And I was like, "Oh, Ash, as an Enneagram six, you're in that reactive group, that 4, 6, 8, you need an emotional response mirrored back to you. This particular person was not in that grouping. They were in the positive outlook group." And so, they were just like, "It's fine. We'll figure it out. We'll get to the other side," you know? And I had just said to her, like, "Ash, you were raised by me as a positive outlook person. So I probably didn't hold space for you all the time when you were trying to express your feelings to me." And I said, "And your dad is the competency group. And so he is about getting things done, and he's not great on the emotional side either. So I'm really sorry that, you know, that neither one of us probably mirrored back some of the emotions and in situations that you really needed when you were young. And I think that might be what's happening. It might be triggering something."
What a sweet moment that you were able to have with her, that you probably didn't wake up thinking you were going to have.
No, I didn't. What I love about the self-awareness work is that I can see myself and the flaws in me, and I have an opportunity to own them. And I can also see the impact that my flaws had in other situations and relationships. And I can make amends when and if they need to be. So it is this beautiful, tender work, and it is a journey. We're on it. Everybody around us is on it. Some people are aware of it and some people aren't, but we're all on a journey.
It's true. Isn't that the truth? That's so good.
Okay. So why don't you share with us where we can find you on socials, or how we can work with you, or anything you want to share with us.
On Instagram is where I'm probably most active. Courtney B Coaching, just Courtney and then the letter B in coaching. And that is probably, I try to share stuff most days there. And then I have a website, same deal, www.courtneybcoaching.com. And you can get in touch with me there if you are interested in coaching or curious or anything like that. But yeah, that's pretty much the best place to find me, unless you're my friend and you want to text me or something. But not gonna do that on the internet. Sorry.
I'm not being that vulnerable right now, okay, people? Oh, well, thank you so much for being with us today. And I'm sure so many people leaned in, listened, and hopefully had some aha moments themselves.
Oh, well, thank you for the opportunity. It's been an honor.
And thank you for joining us today. Join us next time as we continue our conversation about the Enneagram and what it means for your relationships. Don't forget to subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts so you don't miss a single episode. And while you're there, we'd love for you to leave a review. Your kind words help others find the show. For more great Enneagram content, resources, and individual coaching, you can visit enneagramwithjb.com. We'll see you next time on Enneagram with JB.